Okay, now for our main speaker, we've got Larry Kay, and 39 years of sobriety today, all the way from LA, as our main speaker. So welcome.
I've been called a lot of things in my life, but never Larry. My name is Robert, and I'm an alcoholic. It's fine. I've been called worse, much, much worse. What's that? Don't worry about it. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. You're in an AA meeting, not Auto Club, Alcoholics Anonymous. Do you know where you're at? I am really delighted to be here. I want to thank Annette for asking me. I want to thank Jules for doing a great job on a 10-minute talk. I want to thank Joe, my higher power, for my 39-year chip this year. And mostly I want to welcome, if you're new, who's in their first year of sobriety? I want to see the hands. You're always in the back. A lot of you in the back, a couple up front. Okay, so this is the way it works. How many people have more than 25 years of sobriety? Wow, a lot of people, right? So it didn't really work in this room, but usually all the old people are up front because they can't hear, and the new people are all in the back, and I always tell them, see what happens, you slowly move forward as you get more time in AA, but you don't have to wait, right? Those new people, you can sit up in the front row, right? And then you translate for the people who can't, what did he say? And we need you to be of service. I love the enthusiasm in this group. I walked in and I was greeted and people are talking, they're excited to be here, and I love the enthusiasm. I thought, this is really great. I love going to a group where somebody's got the spirit of AA lit in them and there's a lot of excitement. And I thought, what a well group. You saw how many people raised their hands for more than 25 years of sobriety. And I thought, it's a well group. They've worked the steps. There's emotional sobriety. I have to tell you that all went out in the back, out the window when I went to the restroom. In the restroom, just before the break, we were having a serious conversation that we should use the drain in the floor or the sinks because there was a long line. And everyone was tossing about, that is a real possibility. And I thought, oh. Now mind you, I brought the subject up because I needed to go. But nobody says, that's not emotional sobriety. We shouldn't do that. No, they were all like, thinking, if we use the drain, it's gonna hit that guy's feet. I don't know, but nobody said no. And I knew I was in the right place. I'm so happy to be here. And people have said, thank you for driving the long way up here. It's not a big deal to me. I was thinking about, I went to the 9 o'clock Melody meeting this morning, and I thought I had it all the way through. They weren't going to call on me, and a lot of times they call on out about a town guest, and I thought, I've made it through. The guy's not calling out of town people. That's good, because I just want to sit and listen. And then the woman stands up and goes, I'm going to double share. I'm double dipping. I know I already shared, but you really should call on the out-of-town people. And I went, oh, and he just went right to me. And when he did, I started to share. I started getting choked up, which is my problem, is I got really emotional. Today's my AA birthday. And at the end of it, I said, when I was talking about this morning, I said, it's seconds and inches. Seconds and inches that I'm here. It's talked about in the big book. And driving home, I thought about something that I haven't thought about probably in 39 years. And I was with somebody, I don't know who it was. We were out riding four-wheeling in the mountains down in LA in the Hollywood Hills. And he stops and he says, oh, I'm going to go look at this abandoned car and stay in the car. And I said, okay. And he goes and he comes back and we continue on. And then we go to a 7-Eleven or something afterwards to get drinks or whatever it was. And I know that I have my hand in the cooler. And the next thing I know, I have another hand on top of my hand and another hand grabbing this hand and taking it around and says, you want to come with me? Takes me out of the store and into the parking lot. It's all blocked off with police department. And he does a pat down. pats me down in my top pocket and pulls out my cigarettes and pats me down and I'm spread out on the car, the whole deal. And apparently the guy I was with was running drugs and they had been following him in the sky and they were waiting for him to do the drug pickup. Seconds and Inches is in my top pocket were cross tabs. And why, when the guy patted me down, he did not feel the cross tabs? And I thought, and this morning it hit me, if that cop would have felt the cross tabs, which are speed for and I'm not a drug addict. I don't do drugs, but I had them. And kind of like the lie you tell, you know. But I thought, Seconds and Inches, because all that would have happened is if I would have got arrested, my whole life would have gone down a different trajectory. And I have story after story. Seconds and Inches, if that guy didn't get out of the way on the night of my last drink. My last drink was September 7th, 1980. And on 1980, it was a Sunday night. And I was drunk, and I missed hitting a pedestrian by inches, and I made no attempt not to hit him. I had already hit one pedestrian drunk. I was in a lawsuit with this one, and this one, I just didn't care if I hit him. And I didn't care if I killed myself, and I had guns at home, and I thought, I'm just going to blow my brains out because I can't stop drinking. And I didn't care. I've never sunk so low not to care whether you live or die or whether I live or die. I never have sunk that low ever again. But I do know this much. I cried out. I think the prayer that all the people in the back row cried out, as well as all the people in the front row. I hear it as common in every AA talk that I've ever heard. Everybody says this in one form or another, and that is, God help me. That's all we say. God help. There's no get me out of this time. I promise I'll do this. The prayer I prayed in that gar was, God help me before I kill myself or I kill somebody else. And then I had a thought. If you're new, they don't have the steps up. Maybe they're in the foyer. But, you know, we talk a lot about God in here. And if you read the big book, it says the purpose of this book is to bring you to God. And it's a God of your understanding, whatever that means for you. It could be the plants outside, or the sun, or the stars, or some emotional experience you have. But it's to bring you to God. And I had an intuitive thought that night. I was drunk. I just missed this pedestrian by seconds and inches. And the thought came, Robert, why don't you call AA? So I don't know, I don't have the kind of a God that if I'm hungry and I say, God, give me a hot dog, the hot dog just magically appears. That's not my kind of God. It used to be, and then I'd be resentful. Well, that didn't work, you know, and then I'd read the Bible and say, well, you didn't pray right. What kind of a God do you have to pray right to get the hot dog? That's ridiculous, you know. Let me rephrase it. Give me the hot dog, you know. No, that didn't work. But my God now today is, I grew up Irish Catholic, and my God today is intuitive thoughts that I get. Just a simple intuitive thought that comes from outside of myself that upon myself I would not have thought of. In the drunken stupor, almost hitting a pedestrian, thinking about killing myself, the intuitive thought doesn't come, why don't you call AA? What, so I can sit in a bathroom with a bunch of men talking about peeing in the drain on the floor? I don't see how that's gonna help, you know. And but I'm an alcoholic. I don't really know anything about drugs. I smoked a little bit of hash, a little bit of pot, a lot of amyl nitrate, and apparently cross tabs that I forgot about, but I'm not a drug addict. And you know what drug addicts are. I'm not one of them. I'm a pure alcoholic. I love drinking, and I love everything about alcohol. I love the smell of alcohol. I love the concoctions you can make with alcohol. I remember I was 12 years old was when I had my first drink. I was at a family wedding. They were down the street, and I drank beer and champagne, mixed them. That was a good idea at the time. And I had so much fun. I had a blast. And there was a different person that came out when I drank. I'm really a very shy, reserved, quiet, just a self-absorbed, shy kid who has no friends, who looks down a lot. I wear horn-rimmed glasses. I look like Ernie Douglas from My Three Sons. And in fact, a woman, I had a paper route. She wouldn't pay me until I admitted that I was Ernie Douglas from My Three Sons. And but I felt uncomfortable in my skin. I seemed to have always the wrong peachy folder for school. I had like 2 years ago and everybody else was onto the new one. I liked I Love Lucy. You don't dare tell anybody you liked I Love Lucy. You got to tell me you like Batman. And you got to tell me like, no, I like I Love, no. You know, I was an awkward, odd kid. And I felt uncomfortable in my own skin and I didn't like myself. That's really how I felt my whole life. And I got to tell you something, the day I drank, when I was 12 years old at that wedding, that all changed. I remember feeling, I said this to, I should have told somebody, because maybe they could have done an intervention. Because I swear to you, if I would have ever told somebody what was going on, my life would be very different. But I'm a secret. I love secrets. I love secrets even when it's not necessary to have a secret, right? I like to have them. I don't want you to know that I am just like you. I want to be better than you, so I never tell you anything about me, so then I can judge you. Wow. And when I drank at 12 years old, something happened to me, and I should have told somebody, because I got drunk, and I had a feeling that was so amazing. I've spent the rest of my life chasing this feeling. And it was a really simple feeling, and the feeling was, oh my, I said this to myself at 12 years old drunk. Oh my God, this is what it feels like to be normal. I feel like my friend, I didn't have friends really, so to speak, but the people I was hanging, that's how they feel, right? My cousins. And there was a freedom about me that I was no longer having a running dialogue in my head about what was like, I'm chasing them. Why are they looking at you kind of weird? Why do they look at you that way? And why did you wear that? Oh my God, you're so stupid. And you said that stupid thing and you just, and you're trying to be with people while you got this dialogue going on at the same, you're just an odd kid. But when you drink and that all goes quiet and there's a sense of peace and you feel good about yourself and you go, oh my God, this is what it feels like to be normal. Oh my God, I'm normal for the first time in my life. Well, that's not something you say, okay, that was nice and never do that again, you know? And I wanna feel normal. I want that freedom that comes with alcohol for me. The voices in my head stop. I get to be somebody that I'm not. That's all I've ever wanted to be, is to be somebody I'm not, right? I've never wanted to be me. I didn't want to be a Kilgore. My father was a plumber. I would never tell anybody my last name in AA for a long time because I was embarrassed that my father was a plumber. I don't want to be me. I want to come from the Johnson family. He was a film director. Wow. No, your father's a plumber. Oh. And just that embarrassment and that shame, and when I drink, that all goes away, and I get to be whoever I want to be. I got drunk, I got sick, I threw up, and I loved every bit of it. I loved every bit of it. I felt alive. I don't know why throwing up makes me feel alive, but I felt alive. I'm participating in life at last. Like Bill Wilson writes in his story, I was alive in life at last when he was going to war. Mine was throwing up. I'm alive. I have something going on besides just going to school with the wrong peachy folder. And I didn't hold up liquor stores. I wasn't a bad boy. I don't have a story of being a bad boy. I was a Catholic. I went to Mass. I sang in the choir. I was an altar boy. I was just trying to be a good little boy. But inside, I wanted to be a bad boy, but I was afraid. There was God always in the wings, ready to punish you, you know. And I remember reading somewhere along the line that said, if you think about doing something bad, it's just as bad as doing it in God's eyes. And I thought, that doesn't make sense at all. Well, then why not just do it? And I did it. I said, well, if you're going to get punished for thinking about it, you might as well do it and get the joy out of it. And I drank when I could, and alcohol did something for me. I've talked about this a lot, but I remember the second thing that alcohol did for me is I was a really bad student. My parents didn't know I couldn't see. Sorry.
Is
My parents didn't know I couldn't see until I was like late in the second grade. And in the Catholic school, they just kind of push you along. They're doing their best. And so I didn't really have the fundamentals. And the problem is you don't get the alphabet, you don't get addition. They just keep pushing you along. You just become, well, they used to call me a retard. That should tell you what it's all about. And I was a terrible student, terrible, terrible. I didn't have the fundamentals for reading or math or nothing. And but what happened is around the eighth grade, I got into my dad's liquor and I got drunk and I had to take an exam the next day and I got an A on that exam. And I was riding a bicycle with a friend of mine to the grammar school. And a few days later, and I told him I got an A. I said, oh my God, I know why I got an A. This is not podium talk. And I said, I got an A. And he said, because you studied? And I said, no, I got drunk the night before my dad's beer. And he goes, are you out of your mind? He goes, you know, alcohol kills brain cells. Now, how he knew this in the eighth grade, I don't know. And I said, I know. That was the problem. I did have too many brain cells and they didn't have room. Swear to God. They had no room to operate. So a few died off and the others went, now we can work. My friend thought I was crazy. He thought I was crazy. So now I'm in puberty and I'm in the eighth grade and alcohol makes me smart. And alcohol makes me feel normal. I am not giving up alcohol. When alcohol is served, I'm drinking it because I get intelligent. I have had some great conversations. You throw a little marijuana in there, wow, it really gets clear. By the time I'm 18 years old, my father says something to me about my drinking. He says, you know what, Robbie, just because we go to Aunt Mary and Uncle Jim's and they offer you a drink doesn't mean you have to take it to be polite. And I kind of giggled. My father thinks I'm drinking to be polite. I am not drinking to be polite. I am drinking because it makes going to Aunt Mary's and Uncle Jim's tolerable. Why? Because Aunt Mary and Uncle Jim were wealthy. They lived across the street from a famous star. They lived in Toluca Lake. My uncle was in the film business. They were rich, rich, rich. For Christmas, they got like portable little cars that actually moved and drum sets. And I mean, the kids, and I hated them. And I was jealous of them and envious of them. But when I drink, I just don't care. All your little money, I don't really care. Keep talking and showing me your little toys. I really don't care. And that's what alcohol does for me. It makes me smart. It makes me feel normal. And it makes me not feel anything because I don't want to feel anything. I never wanted to be high, happy. Because if you're happy, the crash is coming sooner or later. And I don't really want, I never got people who took downers. I'm already down enough. Why do I want to give me a lawyer? I just don't want to feel anything at all. By the time I was 21, my sister said to me, you're a bad influence on the neighborhood kids because you're drinking. And I thought, she doesn't understand. I was 21 or 22. I embezzled some money. We don't have time to go into it tonight. I only got 25 minutes. I'm a slime ball. I'm going to tell you honestly, I'm a slime ball. I may dress up really good and all that, but I'm a slime ball. When I was drinking, I embezzled money from my grandmother, who was in a convalescent home. She was also very rich. She was my favorite, and she had a lot of money. She was in a nursing home. I didn't have a house. I was feeling low. I embezzled the money, and I bought a house. And to the outside world, I was Mr. Successful, and I was recognized by my job as one of the top 20 salespersons in the Western United States. So the image on the outside is I'm successful. We all know the real truth is something else. I embezzled that money to buy that house. I did not remember this until I got sober. But when I put the keys in the lock and the tumblers turned and they went click, 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 and I pushed the front door open, I can see myself doing it. I said to myself, now I can drink like I've always wanted to. didn't remember that till I got sober. Isn't that an odd thing to say to yourself if you're not an alcoholic? Now I can drink like I've always wanted to. Because I lived alone. There was nobody going to be in that house. I could drink 24/7. Nobody was going to... I went to go visit a friend of mine up in San Francisco, and my problem is when I start drinking, I can't stop, which is the definition of alcoholism. It's a allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind, which if you're new, don't worry about it. All you need to ask yourself is one question. When you start, can you stop? Can you predict with certainty when you're going to stop? I lied to myself, because what I would always say is I don't have a physical allergy to alcohol and I'm drinking beyond my own ability to control it. That's nonsense. And a friend of mine said, did you ever have a craving? I said, I've never had a craving for alcohol, ever. And by that, I'm not really an alcoholic. And she said, did you ever not take a drink when you wanted one? No, not really. Every time I wanted to drink, I took one. She goes, then how would you ever have a craving? I thought, smart ass, and don't talk to her anymore. And because I don't want to be an alcoholic. And I remember I went to San Francisco to see a friend of mine, and I arrived drunk. And the very first thing I asked him is, you have any alcohol in the house? And he paused and he said, I don't think I, and I'm thinking, you either do or you don't. And I know exactly how much liquor I have in my house. I know every bottle because I've marked every bottle where the level is because it's yours. I need to make sure I put enough water back into it. And he goes, no. And I said, well, can you get to a 7-Eleven? It was like 1:30, quarter to two. And I was more worried about him hitting red lights and me not getting to it. Now, this should tell you I'm an alcoholic. It didn't tell me this until I was sober a long time. Until I remembered this. I get to the 7-Eleven, I am panicked. You know, the alcoholic that's jonesing. I gotta have that, I cannot get through tonight. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, or close to, you're going to bed. I cannot get through the night unless I have this alcohol. And him and my other friend are chatting. Red light, come on, step on it, step on it, step on it. And they're like, whatever. We get to the liquor store, this is not podium talk. I am not kidding when I tell you this. I go up to the thing and I said, you know what? Give me a quart of vodka or a half gallon of vodka, I think was what I asked for. He turns around and I'm thinking, could you hurry it up because it's getting close to two. He puts it on the counter. Before I pay for it, I put my hand around the bottle. I kid you not, I go, everything's going to be okay. And then he tells me how much it is. I don't let go of the bottle. I do this. Trying to get my wallet out with this hand. Get it out. I'm not letting go. Pay for the bottle, and then it's telling what I do. This is the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in a very odd way. I turn around to my friends once I have the bottle. So how are you? How's life going? How are things? What's going on? I didn't talk to him about him at all. All I was... And we go back to the house. We have drinks and stuff like this. And then he pulls out some Coke and he cuts some Coke and he said, you want some? And this is the grace of God. And the voice inside of me said, Robert, don't do it. You can't stop drinking. You will never stop doing Coke and it will be the death of you. Don't do it. And something in me said, no, I'll pass, because I knew I couldn't stop. And then I did some hideous things that night I can't talk about from the podium. All I know is the next morning, you wake up, and the next morning, Bill Wilson talks about it, the shame, the remorse, the regret, the guilt, the fear gripped me, and the only thing I could do is I walked downstairs, I poured myself another drink, my buddy comes down, he says, what are you drinking? And I said, oh, I helped myself to some orange juice in the refrigerator. He goes, I don't have any orange juice, came over, grabbed my thing, smelled, and he goes, Robert, it's 8 o'clock in the morning and you're drinking vodka. You're an alcoholic, Robert. I watched you last night. You got a problem. I don't have a problem. So now family's told me. My friends have told me. My girlfriend who asked to marry me told me, Robert, you're an alcoholic. Go to AA instead, and we'll talk about getting married. I got everybody telling me, and you know what my reply to every single person is? You don't understand. And you know the truth is, they didn't. They don't understand what alcohol does for me. It doesn't do for anybody else in my family. I asked my sister one time, she has a glass of wine every night she comes home from work. I said to her, have you ever thought about having another one after you've had that one? No, not really. A lot of times I don't even finish it. I just throw it down the drain. And of course I rile. I said, what do you mean you throw it down the drain? And I was up here with a group of friends a couple of weeks ago, and I had a brand new car, broke down, long story short. They got me, picked me up, and we went over to the fair on Thursday night to grab something to eat, but they were all shutting down. We went into a restaurant, and I said to my friend, the least I could do is let me buy you dinner for helping me out. And he ordered a glass of wine. It was really noisy. I finished my food. I said, let's go. And he had left a glass of wine on the table. And I said, well, aren't you going to finish it? And he goes, well, like, you're really in a hurry. I said, and your point is? I said, take it with you or just gulp it down. And I said, I paid $12 for that glass of wine. Damn it, don't be lit. He goes, well, you're leaving your coat. I said, who cares? The wine. Drink the wine. You know? And that's the way it is. What happens to me, how I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, is I did ask this girl to marry me that I was dating, and she didn't take kindly to my proposal. I proposed to her in the women's bathroom on a camping trip with other women present, and I was drunk, and I said, would you marry me? She says, Robert, you're in the women's bathroom. No, I'm not. And she's explained why all the women in here. And I said, oh, you know what? You're just so pedantic. Just marry me. Everything will be okay. And you saw what I was fishing for. You will fix me and make me okay. It will be a tragic life for you, but I will get fixed. She said, you know what? She goes, Robert, you have a drinking problem. You've been drunk since 5 o'clock this morning. I was 24 years old. And this is what happens. I wait a month. She says, if you go over to AA for a month, call me. She wouldn't talk to me for a month. Call me. And then we'll talk. And so I waited a month and called her. And I'm not kidding you. I said, hi, Eileen. She said, you haven't gone to AA yet, have you? But how does she know? I still to this day don't know how she knew, you know. And I've made amends to her, but I forgot to ask her how she knew. She knew some other stuff that really blew me away when I made an amends that I didn't know. And which I'll tell you about. One of it's quite funny. And she planted that seed. So what happens is, I don't really know what happens, but I get drunk. I go to work. I'm late. I show up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I told them I overslept. And my boss says, Robert, you got a problem. You didn't oversleep, Robert. Oversleeping, maybe if you had to be here at 7, you got here at 7:20. You had to be here at noon. It's 1:30. How do you oversleep? Well, you know why I overslept. I was out drinking the night before, and I don't remember much about that night. But I know that this guy walks into my job a few minutes after I thought about calling AA, and then I thought better, and I put the number in my back pocket, and he walks in, and I say, we chatted, we used to work together, let's go out and have a drink or something. He goes, well, I don't drink. I said, what are you, an alcoholic or something? And he says, well, why do you want to know? And I went, I don't know. I don't know why I thought it was going to be romantic, sexy, intriguing. I always thought alcoholics were that way, and now you turn out they're just disgusting pigs in the men's room. But I said, well, I think I might have a drinking problem. And he lit up. I hadn't seen this guy in a long time. I really didn't even know his name. And he starts talking. He never mentioned AA, but he wanted to give me his card, talk about drink. I tore it up, threw it in the trash. He said, I'll never tell anybody I've gone, even thought about calling AA. Month goes by, my family throws me my 25th birthday, which my birthday is September 9th, 1980, or that year, and they throw me a birthday party, and I lock myself in the house. And I ask God, help me not drink today, help me not smoke any pot, drink, help me not have sex, help me not shoplift, and let me just stay in the house. That's probably the best thing. And so I locked myself in the house till 5 o'clock, and I was stone cold sober when I went to my family's birthday party. I walked in the door, and they said something that pushed me over the edge, literally pushed me over the edge, put me into a frenzy. They said, how are you? And I thought, how rude, that's none of your business, why are you prying into my life? I went into the kitchen, and I poured myself a bourbon in 7, and I took a swig of it. I went in the living room, I said, I can get through this now. And they said, oh, what are you drinking? I said, oh, I helped myself to a Diet Coke in the refrigerator. They go, Robert, it's a see-through glass, and we can see it's bourbon and 7 like you always drink. And then they said something that really mystified me. They said, we thought you were going to do something about your drinking. I've never talked to my family about my drinking. I've never said I was going to do anything about my drinking. What are they talking about? You have to think quick. And I said, well, I am doing something about my drinking. This is all within the first couple of minutes, right? I mean, I haven't even put my bag down or whatever I was carrying. And I said, I've gone to AA. And they said, you did? And I said, yes. They said, well, what did they tell you? They told me to drink, 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 get out of my system. And I won't swear, but I swore a lot. That's what I'm doing. And I got drunk, went in the swimming pool, and I had a moment of clarity. I was drunk by myself in the swimming pool. My two brother-in-laws appeared at the edge. I looked at them and I said, God, I would love to feel how they feel right now without the use of drugs and alcohol. And that was all I said. I don't remember much about the rest of the night, but on the way home, I almost hit another pedestrian when I cried out, God help me before I kill someone or kill myself. And the thought said, call AA. And I called AA. I wouldn't tell them my name. I wouldn't give them my phone number. I wouldn't tell them where I lived. I wouldn't tell them where I worked. I wouldn't give them even the general location. And all he said to me was, buddy, I don't go to this group, but after talking to you for the last 2 minutes, I think you need to go to a place called the Pacific Group. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And I hung up the phone with him and I asked him to send me literature in the mail. He told me no. And I went to work the next day. And in walks that same guy that had walked in 30 days before. And this time he's got his hands raised. He says, Robert, I know this is sound really weird to you. Again, I really don't know this guy. He told me we used to work together. I had no recollection. And he said, but I'm at home. Today's my day off. And God told me to come see Robert over at Sears that something happened to him. And I got goosebumps up and down my arms. I started to cry. And I said, I called AA last night. I cannot stop drinking. And he said, I'm 6 months sober in AA. Took me out to the snack bar at Sears. Bought me a cup of coffee and 12-stepped me. Took me to a meeting 2 days later. And I've never seen him since. Never seen him since. And my AA sobriety started, and I am not a rocket scientist in AA. It was slow. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I did not want to give up the only thing that made me feel better. I have never found anything in this lifetime that makes me feel as good as taking a drink. Well, maybe Percodet and Percocet and Percodam. And I took those one time. My mom was a prescription pill addict, and it runs in the family. Apparently, before I got sober, I had my wisdom teeth taken out, and the doctor gave me a two-week supply, and I called him 3 days later and said, I'm out. And he said, can't be. I gave you a two-week supply. I said, well, something must have happened to him. And nothing, and I just didn't want to be an alcoholic. I don't want to give up drinking, but I can't stop drinking, and my life is a disaster. My life is an utter disaster. I've got 52 credit cards I owe on all of them. I haven't paid property taxes on this house that I embezzled. I haven't paid income taxes. I am naked a lot when I drink, which I can't get into. There is something about getting drunk at home, and the clothes come off, and out the door I go. And had this little 65-year-old woman that used to live next door could see right into the backyard, and had to make amends to her. That was a good one. And but I was a slow recovery, really, really slow, really, really slow. I did not want to be an alcoholic. I resented Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor around 90 days told me to make a gratitude list. Number 17 was that I was sober. It hurt to be sober. If you're new, and I say this with all sincerity, if you are new and it is worse for you sober than it is when you were out drinking, I want to welcome you to AA. You're my kind of an alcoholic. Because we've taken away the only thing, or you've given up the only thing that made you feel better. That's what happened to me. I gave up the only thing that made me feel better. And sitting in the room in the early days of sobriety was not making me feel good because I don't like people. I don't like them talking to me, touching me, and certainly don't ask me how I am. And and I didn't want to be an alcoholic, and I wouldn't identify. And a guy came up to me, and I said, he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm in the wrong place. I'm not an alcoholic. He said, well, isn't it better to be in AA by mistake, Robert, than be out there drinking by mistake? And I couldn't argue. And then I heard a woman say something that changed my sobriety. I think it was like 4 or 5 years sober before I really conceded to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And it's not anything that you would read in the big book. It's something you'd only hear in an AA meeting. This woman gets up, she's telling her story, and whatever, you know how we are. Hurry up, it's 9:25 yet. And she says, I used to wrap my wine bottles in paper bags individually and then put them in another bag. So when the garbage men dumped them, they wouldn't go clink, clink, clink. And they would say, my God, that woman drinks a lot. And I went, oh my God, that's exactly what I used to do. And I was like frozen like a possum caught in the light. I was just... Well, Robert, get out of that one. You just heard a woman talk about wrapping her liquor bottles. You did the exact same thing. And I feel so bad for the people today because you can never experience that because we have automatic machines that come by and pick them up. So you can just throw them in there willy-nilly. But I was concerned that they would say how much I drank. And I go, oh my God, I am an alcoholic. And once I opened the door just a crack, I could begin to see my alcoholism. I could see that I couldn't stop when I started. I could see how much alcohol meant to me and why I didn't want to give it up. I was crazy. Joe wants me to tell this story. I don't know why, but I will tell this story. So I hated Clancy. Oh my God. And so I said to my sponsor, who was sponsored by Clancy, I hate that man. I was, I don't know, 6 months sober, and I hate that man. He goes, I think you ought to go down to the Midnight Mission and tell him. And I said, that's a good idea. And so... swear to God, don't let your newcomer do this, okay? Mine encouraged it, you know, and I think he thought this is going to be fun to watch. And I am a snot-nosed 24-year-old, 25-year-old, drunk, 6 months sober, and I am going to go tell somebody what I think of them. Thinking I have every right to do. I mean, I just, oh my God, the arrogance. It makes me sick to even tell the story. But I go down there, make an appointment, I go down there, and I walk in, and he goes, Robert, how are you? And I thought, well, he knows my name. Why does he know my name? And he goes, can I get you a cup of coffee? And I thought, don't you be nice to me. I've got a lot of things to say to you. And pours me a cup of coffee, and he says, do you take cream and sugar in that? I said, yes, one sugar. And he puts cream in it, and then he gets a spoon, and then he stirs it for me. And I said, oh, don't you be nice to me. I've got a lot of things to say. And then he hands it to me. He says, what brings you down here? Couldn't have been kinder. I don't like you. And I told him, he goes, why don't you like me? And I told him everything. I don't like this about you, this. I took this man's inventory. And he said something that absolutely floored me, because if it happened to me, if Joe came to me and said, I'm gonna take your inventory and tell you what I think of you, I'd hit him. I'd just hit him. I would apologize later, but I would hit him, right? And he goes, do you know why you don't like me? And I said, no. And he said, I'm gonna tell you why you don't like me. Because you want to be just like me. And if you think about that, it couldn't be truer. The truth couldn't be any truer. I wanted what he had. People loved him. He seemed to have power. He seemed to be a great communicator. He seemed to be of real help to other people. He would sacrifice himself constantly to help somebody else. And I certainly wanted that because I felt useless. I was later to go down and then ask for his help, which was a real blessing. It changed my life and gave me some direction. But I was crazy. This woman gets up to the podium. She was 90 days sober, and I was a couple months sober, and she gets up to the podium. Or she gets up there and just talks about how wonderful her life is, and her husband bought her a brand new Mercedes-Benz, and they were closing escrow, and says, I'm so grateful for these 30 days of sobriety, the miracle of AA, and of course, I got all these problems. I got lawsuits. They're thinking about putting me in jail for embezzling money because I got caught. And I said to my sponsor, he said, you got to pray for her for 2 weeks. So I went home, prayed for her, in the name of Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Let that bitch drink, let her understand. True story, and amen. And my sponsor said, did you pray for it? And I said, yeah. He goes, what'd you pray for? I said, I prayed to that bitch drink and learn a little humility. And oh my God, Robert, you can't do that. That's blasphemy. And I said, oh, you're a Jew. You know nothing about blasphemy. I'm a Catholic. I know blasphemy. You know nothing. I was crazy. but I didn't drink. What happened to me, and I want to talk about this because I got crazy around 10 years of sobriety. I was sponsoring a lot of people, but I don't think I had seen a step. I'd seen the steps. You know, there's one thing, you go to step studies all the time. There's a huge difference between that and actually working a step. And I hadn't worked a step in a long time, and I sponsored a lot of people. I go to a lot of meetings, a lot of service, sponsor a lot of people, and teach them the big book, but not bringing it in. And I was crazy, and my sponsor left AA, and Howard moved. I had Howard Pollins was my sponsor. He moved. That was not the one who left AA. It was somebody else. And I asked another guy to sponsor me, and he said no. This guy was like 25 years sober. He used to drag drunks out of the bushes off the freeway ramps, bring them into his house, and sober them up, but told me no. Just to drive home the point, in case you don't get how crazy I was. And I begged him and begged him and begged him, and he finally acquiesced. He said, fine, you're going to do what I tell you to do, and I don't want to hear any arguments from you. I want you to do an inventory. And I couldn't do it. And I went to his house, and I had this huge inventory I'd been working on for about a year. I had 775 resentments. I'd written on all of them, and blah, blah, blah. I started to read one to him. He said, no, I won't live that long to listen to this crap. You go home and summarize this. And I couldn't do it. So I went 2 weeks later, and he says, fine, I'll do your inventory for you. And got out a pen and paper and goes, who are you mad at? And I thought, you. And he wrote mother instead. And so my mother was a pill addict and so forth and so on. And you know, he said, what did it affect? I said, my whole life. And he goes, no, personal relationships, sex relationships, you know, pride, self. And I said, are we really going to do this? I said, I know the book. He goes, yeah, Robert, we're really going to do this. I said, well, it's really clear my mother was a drug addict. You can figure it out. And that's the way I talked to that man. And he taught me how to do an inventory by taking mine. He took my mother's inventory. He got me to see my part with my mother's drug addiction. We put father on the paper. He got me to see my part with my father. And then he said something that really floored me. He said, Robert, go home and do this inventory exactly the way it's laid out in the big book, just as we have demonstrated today here with you. I want a resentment inventory, a fear inventory, and a sex inventory. I am so sick of hearing about your sex life. And I said, Armando, I don't talk to you about my sex life. He goes, oh, I know. I hear about it from everybody else and the people I sponsor. He goes, and I'm sick of it. And I did that. I went home and I did that inventory exactly the way it's laid out in the big book. I went and I read it to him. I had a spiritual experience that I wasn't looking for. I was in this backyard and I was filled with the presence of God from the top of my head to the tip of my toes. I was filled with the presence of God. And I just knew in that moment, God said, Robert, I love you. You're perfect just the way you are. There's nothing you need to do. And I said, but God, look at all these things I've done. I just read about it. And he goes, no, Robert, you are perfect the way I created you. You are perfect today as you sit here. You are blocking me from the actions that you're taking, but you are perfect the way I created you. And that day, two things happened to me that I wasn't expecting. Not only did I have that spiritual experience, just like Bill Wilson's, it was no white light. And it lasted for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then it was gone. And I've never been as happy as in that moment. I can't tell you, I can't even describe the electrifying feeling I had. But two things happened that I wasn't expecting. One, I was horribly depressed, clinically depressed. I wasn't on anything. I didn't take anything, but I know what it is because I work in that field. And I knew I was in trouble because I also wanted to kill myself. The depression I was in that day lifted me without me doing anything other than reading that inventory. And the second thing is I was, things happened to me as a boy that we don't have time to get in here tonight. But I was horrified of older men touching me, horrified. If my sponsor put his hand on my knee to give me a pat, and I would move it. If he put his arm around me in a meeting, I would cringe and move it. I would have to tell myself, Robert, it's appropriate for you to put your arm around your sponsee and give him a little pat on the back. I would have to mechanically tell myself to do that because it didn't come naturally to me. That feeling disappeared that day and has never returned again. I've had a great life in AA. It's time for me to stop. I just want to say one thing. The last few years have been really, really difficult. That man who changed my life called me and told me that he didn't want to sponsor me. When I was 20 years sober, he said, when you asked me, I didn't want to. I got to tell you, 5 years later, you're one of my best friends. I love you so much. And he said, that's because of, you've done the work in AA. He died unexpectedly. I got another sponsor who had known me for 35 years at the time. And then he went out at 39 years of sobriety. And then he died after that. Then I got another sponsor. I went back to Howard. I met him in a meeting we were speaking at. And then Howard, of course, died a year and a half later. And then one of my best friends of 20 years of sobriety died of a drug overdose. Apparently was taking pills and not telling anybody. And so in that four-year period, all these significant people died. And I woke up one day feeling incredibly alone and sad. Horribly alone. And I walked downstairs one day. And I said, you should just kill yourself, Robert, and just end this misery. And I thought, oh my God, where'd this come from? I'm in AA, I'm doing the steps, I'm praying. And, I finally asked another man to sponsor me. I said, everybody told me I can't ask you because I killed the last three. So, how's your health? And he goes, I'm 81, but I'm doing good. I said, okay, get a few years out of you. And, it took me a while. I mean, Howard died in March. I got him. And I got to tell you something that happened to me, and then I'll stop. We've been meeting. He lives in Oxnard. I live in Hollywood. And I drove up on the way here. I stopped and had lunch with him, coffee with him. And we sat and talked for an hour and a half. And because I haven't just had that time to sit and talk to another man, I had to make a decision. Are you going to open up your heart and trust someone? And I looked at him, and I know he's 81, he's 52 years sober, and I told him stuff that I hadn't told anybody. Not that I was intentionally holding secrets, it was just stuff that I thought, I don't know if I want to trust again. And part of it was to say, I've been depressed for the last few months. I didn't want to tell him that. I'm 39 years sober, for crying out loud. I shouldn't be depressed. You know, I said, so I've got some health issues that I'm having to deal with all of a sudden. And my body is getting old and I'm getting old and I haven't told anyone. I'm telling you so that you can carry the burden with me. And at the end of the day, I said, the only thing I want from you as a sponsor really is to help me increase my conscious contact with God and to be accountable for my actions every day. Because at the end of the day, that's the ticket. Is a conscious contact with God and being accountable to you. Joe and I were talking about accountability earlier. My spirit was just lifted. He's been sponsoring me for about a month, but my spirit was lifted when I made the decision to open my heart again, to trust and to make myself accountable. If you're new, I hope I've said something that captures the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous and the miracle that occurred for me. I am not the crazy guy that walked in here 39 years ago. I just retired from my job after 30 years, and they didn't want me to leave. They asked me to come back. That just doesn't happen, right? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love what I saw here in this room. I love what I saw at dinner, which is a spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous alive and well. Thank you so much for being with me.
Give Robert one more round of applause.